30 years ago, my next guest was burnt out from years of working in the gaming industry. These days, he's a poet, teacher, and ritualist. William Ayotte has worked in prisons and men's groups. He's led rites of passage and taught in boardrooms and business schools around the world. His new book, Reenchanting the Forest, Meaningful Ritual in a Secular World, tells the story of his personal transformation through ritual. But it does much more than that. Drawing on the cultures of indigenous peoples, his book explores the ways in which engaging with ritual and its inner meaning may restore a sense of wonder and enchantment to our hectic lives.
Imagine an old Cotswold stone country house with a large lawn, a vast tulip tree to one side, and at its roots, a spring of the purest water. Imagine fields with docile cattle leading away to woods at either end, and opposite, a broad vista of the sleepy valley below and the hills of Gloucestershire beyond. This was to be the site of our first howling, snarling, and ultimately empowering West African grief ritual.
William Ayotte, welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Richard.
Now, I know from my own religious experience that rituals can very easily become empty routines. What do you mean when you talk about meaningful ritual?
For me, I think ritual, and there are many definitions of ritual we have to accept in different cultures, but for me, ritual is a symbolic act. And it's a symbolic act that we can give our soul a message. Our soul or our psyche, depending on how we care to look at it, but a ritual act through which we can give our soul or psyche an important message. For instance, we wear a wedding ring, perhaps. We look at ourselves as married from that moment onwards. It's a moment with a before and an after. If we take the wedding ring off, that's also giving ourselves a message. And ritual very much speaks to that part of the soul which doesn't count, doesn't do data, doesn't do emails, but it does understand pictures and images.
So it's a kind of language without words in a way. Now, you've dedicated your life to the restoration of ritual in our increasingly secular culture. How much has that decline to do with the decline of religion? Because there's a lot of ritual and ceremony in religion, and that vacuum, yes. Are you trying to fill it in this kind of a way?
I don't think I'm not seeking to replace religion. I wouldn't presume to be doing that. What I do want to do is I want to restore people's confidence in their communities, in the world around them, to meet a deeper need. We're drawn out of ourselves by modern culture. We're taken away from the deeper things in life. And whatever we care to call that, be it whether we come at it from a religious point of view or a spiritual point of view or a secular point of view, we have a hunger. And one becomes aware of that when speaking to people. And I think that ritual is probably as good a way as any to get back in touch with that deeper part of ourselves and to reconnect us to our communities and to the world around us, the environment. And for me, that's a very important point.
Mm. I mean, I don't want to hammer this, William, but
no.
It is associated with religion. I'm interested in here is, are you trying to open up the possibility of a kind of religionless ritual that nevertheless is filled with profound meaning, but not necessarily that kind of meaning?
No, I think that ritual can be applied to any religion in any religious context. I do think that many rituals in the religious context that we talk about, and we're talking primarily here, I imagine, about a Christian context, I think that in many instances, ritual has lost its savour, has lost its juice, if you like. And I think people in any form of life, be that religious or secular, can use ritual to get back in touch. I don't want to say, if you don't want religion, you can do ritual outside and it will supply something. If you have a religious context, then ritual will work probably just as well. However, it's not an essential. When I've worked with corporate groups, very often I mention the word ritual and there's an intake of breath because people in the past have been repelled by religion. They feel in some way they have a bad experience with religion, and they associate ritual with religion. Now, I think they're confusing ceremonial and ritual. And I think that there's a distinction there between what you might think of as a ceremonial, which deals with affirming what is the status quo, and ritual, which deals with changing things, with altering something.
Stick with the corporate sector, because I'm intrigued by the fact that you work with them. It must be the most disenchanted part of society. I mean, what kind of work do you do with them?
We call it a breakthrough work, or we call it presence work. We call it symbolic action. There are a lot of terms that we can use. Business is famous for its bending of language, let's be honest. But we can get people to touch something that needs alteration, that needs... There's a big call for authenticity in leadership, for instance. There's a big call for people to be vulnerable. That's not easy.
Especially for these captains of industry.
Absolutely.
You don't show that side
of
yourself,
right.
Do you?
Yeah. And, of course, when you worked in management for 10, 15, 20 years, you've been trained to shut down. When you suddenly become a leader, a senior leader, you're suddenly expected to step out of the egg fully formed and prepared to be vulnerable, be open, to lead from the heart, and a lot of buzzwords that are being flung around these days. But one of the best ways to do that is to ritualize the process of opening up in a limited group, in a safe environment, to do that and to, in a sense, use ritual as a rehearsal for later leadership.
The most moving bit of your very interesting book, in a sense, is your own childhood story. The descriptions are wrenching. It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that it was ritual that saved your life. So how did you hit on it as an instrument of salvation for your own self, actually?
I think I'd been, in a way, pre-programmed accidentally, as many of us are. I think we all have an instinctive core pull towards ritual. If you ever go to a wedding or a ceremony, you see children automatically knowing what to do and absorbing the seriousness of it all. So I was pre-programmed, but when my life began to unravel, what I realized was that ritual was giving my life shape and form. It was helping me, and in a sense, holding me together when my life was very fractured. So I think there's a way that ritual can serve us by calming us, by gathering us, if that's the word, by bringing us back together, and also in making us feel a part of a wider community.
We started this item with that lovely mesmeric drumming. So tell us about that. You've studied the rituals of indigenous cultures.
Yes.
Tell us about them. In particular, is it the Dagara people in West Africa?
Yes.
You brought them to Britain, didn't you?
I was part of a group that brought some indigenous teachers to Britain over a period of years. And the Dagara people of West Africa, who were, in our experience, led by Maladoma Somme and his then-wife Sabonfu Somme, they introduced us to a very different way of ritualizing. The drum, for instance, is an integral part of a process. There's a lot of talk about things like drugs and ayahuasca and so on and so forth in ritualizing. And actually, you don't need any of that at all. The drum is a thing that kind of alters one's state. That the African drumming in particular responds to the heartbeat. So it has a different beat to the typical Western beat that we have in a military drum, for instance. So there's a physical felt response to the drum.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's impossible to resist it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And at that point, we begin to move. And that's an essential part of ritual. I think part of our problem in the West with ritual is that we've shut it down and it's become static. Maladoma Somme, for instance, would say, if you don't move, the spirits will think you're a post.
A lump of wood.
Yes, exactly. You're just in the West, we become very still in ritual moments. Well, in actual fact, imagine a gospel choir. The inherent movement in it. And of course, in music these days, in a cappella singing and so on and so forth, we're famously trying to move now in our rather clunky Western way, but we're doing it. And in African ritual, that's a given.
And even orchestras can move. I mean, we're used to the rather static European picture, but the Venezuelan
children,
my God, they're jiving away, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a and once you get into that place, it's easier to vocalize, it's easier to speak, it's easier to speak your truth, and it's easier to embrace a community, because we're all a part of something.
You're a poet as well as a ritualist. I mean, are they connected? I mean, poetry, in a sense, has got a kind of ritualistic rhythm to it, hasn't
it? Oh, yes, very much so.
So relate them for us.
In my case, I think that a ritual provides a text. It also provides images, and it provides a context. These days, of course, there are many, many non-religious ceremonies that are being held, funerals, weddings, and so on and so forth, and it's amazing how many people resort to poetry, because it provides a context. It provides a kind of an imaginal anchor to which people can tie a ritual, and that's very important.
William, you burnt yourself out before in the service of something other.
Sure.
How do you avoid burning yourself out now in the service of people? Because I get the impression there's an intensity in you that might actually risk that.
Oh, of course. It's a constant. And I think my nature is such that I'm constantly courting that, in the sense of I come from an addictive background, and one of my little addictions is an addiction to intensity. That's in my makeup, I think. And I have to be constantly aware of that.
Listen to the drums more, brother. Listen to the drums.
Yes, and also I'm developing a passion for Georgian sacred music, which is the most extraordinary effusion of soul.
Yeah, yeah. Good man. William Mayert, thank you. Re-enchanting the Forest is published by Vala Publishing Cooperative.